Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Killing the Killers is an installment in Bill O'Reilly's long-running Killing series, a line of narrative history and contemporary reportage that examines high-stakes events through the lens of power, conflict, and consequence. In this volume, O'Reilly turns to the modern era of counterterrorism, focusing on how the United States and its allies identify, pursue, and eliminate individuals and networks linked to mass casualty attacks. The book aims to connect policy decisions in Washington with operations carried out by intelligence services and special mission units, explaining how targets are selected, how missions are authorized, and what strategic goals are supposed to be achieved. Along the way, it frames debates about national security, executive authority, and the moral and legal boundaries of targeted killing. Written for general readers, the narrative emphasizes urgency and clarity, offering a guided tour of major operations and the broader war on terror context that shaped them. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how targeted killing became a core counterterrorism tool. A central theme is the evolution of targeted killing from an exceptional response into a routine instrument of statecraft in the post-9/11 landscape. The book highlights the pressures that drove this shift, including public demand for security, the challenge of detaining suspects across borders, and the difficulty of dismantling decentralized terrorist networks through conventional warfare. It outlines how intelligence collection, surveillance, and interagency coordination can converge into a decision to remove a specific individual believed to be planning or enabling attacks. The narrative also stresses that this approach is not only about tactical success, but about signaling, deterrence, and disruption. By focusing on named targets in specific operations, the book shows how counterterrorism strategy often rests on the belief that leadership removal degrades organizational capacity. At the same time, it acknowledges the trade-offs, such as the risk of retaliation, recruitment surges after high-profile strikes, and the possibility that new leaders may be more extreme or more competent. The topic invites readers to consider whether eliminating individuals can substitute for resolving underlying political conditions, and how a tactic can shape long-term strategy. Secondly, inside the intelligence and decision pipeline, the book emphasizes that successful counterterrorism operations depend less on cinematic raids and more on patient intelligence work. It describes, at a high level, how information can be gathered from human sources, signals interception, surveillance, financial tracking, and partner nation cooperation. These streams must be assessed for credibility, fused into actionable leads, and translated into plans that can survive legal review and political scrutiny. The narrative draws attention to the role of analysts who connect fragments into a coherent picture, and to the operational planners who turn that picture into feasible options. Another important point is the friction within and between institutions. Agencies may guard sources, disagree about threat assessments, or compete for influence over policy. The topic also highlights how presidential authority, national security advisors, and military leadership interact when deciding whether to act. Readers come away with a clearer sense of why timing matters, why certainty is rare, and why leaders must often choose among imperfect options. The book uses prominent counterterrorism cases to illustrate how mistakes can occur at any stage, from misidentification to faulty assumptions about local dynamics, reinforcing that outcomes are shaped by both information quality and judgment. Thirdly, operations, raids, and the reality of modern battlefields. Killing the Killers presents the operational side of counterterrorism as a blend of precision, speed, and uncertainty. It focuses on how special operations forces and supporting elements conduct missions in environments where geography, politics, and local allegiances can shift rapidly. The book underscores practical constraints gaining access to airspace, staging forces discreetly, protecting sensitive intelligence, and coordinating with allies who may have different priorities. It also shows that even when a target is located, the final approach can hinge on small variables such as weather, timing, or last-minute movement. The narrative conveys the high risk faced by operators, along with the heavy emphasis on rehearsals, contingency planning, and rules of engagement intended to reduce civilian harm. Another key aspect is the aftermath. A raid or strike may remove a leader, but it can also create power vacuums, trigger propaganda campaigns, or inflame local resentment. This topic helps readers understand that tactical brilliance does not automatically produce strategic clarity. By following major counterterrorism actions, the book illustrates how governments evaluate success, how they manage public messaging, and how they adapt when an operation yields unexpected second-order effects. Fourthly, legal and moral boundaries in the war on terror. A recurring issue is the tension between security imperatives and the legal and ethical frameworks meant to restrain state violence. The book addresses the arguments used to justify targeted killing, including self-defense, the laws of armed conflict, and executive power during ongoing hostilities. It also surfaces concerns that critics raise, such as due process, sovereignty violations, civilian casualties, and the precedent set when powerful states normalize lethal action beyond traditional battlefields. This topic matters because it shapes public trust and international legitimacy. The book explores how policymakers weigh risks the cost of inaction if an attack succeeds versus the cost of action if intelligence is wrong or collateral damage occurs. It also highlights how definitions matter, including who counts as a combatant, what constitutes an imminent threat, and how accountability is maintained when operations are classified. Readers are encouraged to see that counterterrorism is not only a military or intelligence problem, but also a governance challenge. The legal and moral debates influence alliance relationships, domestic politics, and the willingness of partner nations to cooperate. Ultimately, the book portrays targeted killing as a tool that demands continual scrutiny because the line between protection and overreach can be thin. Lastly, strategic consequences and what success really means. Beyond individual missions, the book asks readers to consider how counterterrorism campaigns reshape national priorities and global politics. Removing a high-value target can deliver immediate disruption, yet long-term success is harder to define and measure. The topic explores metrics such as reduced attack capability, fragmentation of networks, and deterrence effects, while also acknowledging that ideology, instability, and online radicalization can regenerate threats. The book places these events within broader geopolitical competition, where rival states, regional conflicts, and weak governance can provide safe havens for extremist groups. It also highlights how domestic opinion and media narratives influence strategy, including pressure for decisive action after attacks. Another consequence is institutional, sustained counterterrorism. Operations can expand surveillance powers, increase secrecy, and create path dependencies that are difficult to reverse. This topic helps readers understand that a tactical win may come with strategic costs, and that policymakers often face dilemmas with no clean resolution. The book ultimately frames success as a balance of protection, restraint, and adaptability, arguing that a country must defend itself without undermining the values and alliances that support its security. It leaves readers thinking about how the next generation of threats may require different tools than the last. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a fast-moving, big-picture account of modern American counterterrorism, especially those curious about how intelligence work, special operations, and national leadership intersect when confronting terrorist threats. It can benefit a reader's life by improving civic literacy. It clarifies the trade-offs behind security policies that influence elections, budgets, alliances, and civil liberties. By presenting the pursuit of high-value targets as a chain of decisions rather than a single dramatic moment, it helps readers think more critically about cause and effect, unintended consequences, and the limits of power. Compared with more academic studies, Killing the Killers aims for accessibility and narrative momentum, making complex events easier to follow for non-specialists. At the same time, it stands out within popular war on terror books by organizing the subject around specific operations and strategic turning points that illustrate how policy becomes action. For readers who have followed the Killing series, it extends the brand into contemporary conflict while keeping the focus on consequential individuals and the machinery of history. If you want an engaging overview that encourages informed debate, it is a worthwhile purchase. If you would like to support Bill O'Reilly, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.